Hello and welcome to this edition of Community Connections. I'm your host, Chuck Curlin. Today, our topic is the Laurel House. And from the Laurel House is Stacy Dougherty. She is the Deputy Director, as well as Brad Smith, the Development Director. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
I'll go to you first, Brad. Laurel House, can you give our audience a little bit of a background of what it is and how it came about?
Yeah, so we are Montgomery County's comprehensive domestic violence program. So I like to say in simple terms, if someone's in an unsafe relationship, we're there to help. Please reach out to us if that's the case. But we offer many services just besides safety. One is counseling. We have a community education department that I know Stacy can speak on more than I can, and also our medical advocacy. Our domestic abuse response team is very exciting, in terms of just being advocates for people who are needing help. And also our Safe Haven Center, really proud of. So that's in a nutshell who we are, but really in Montgomery County, we started in 1980. Wow. So, we're coming up on some big anniversaries soon.
Yeah. Yep. Wow, that's it. And being a deputy director, what does that entail?
Oh gosh, it's always at other duties as assigned on the job description, but it's a lot. I mean, I manage most of the programs, like Brad was saying, our shelter and housing programs, our outreach programs, like our community education, our medical advocacy, our crisis response team. And then I also oversee all of our grant pieces. So at all the private foundation grants, all of our government grants, our volunteers, and then I do a lot of the compliance and database work that we have. So a little bit of everything. I've even plunged a toilet or two in my
Jack of all trades.
Yes.
Yes. How many people are involved in Laurel House now? Because it's been around for a while, right? Since 1980.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question in terms of, we have so many volunteers and throughout the years, what's been a great part of being part of the community is really when you're out in public and somebody says, hey, you're from Laurel House, you hear stories of people who really helped out. Maybe they helped clean the shelter, back in 1985 or whatever, but they have these stories, or, hey, my wife used to volunteer. So we have lots of people who have really volunteered and supported us throughout the years, which has been great. And we can't do it without, the cliche is it takes a village.
Yes.
And it really does, I think, as a small nonprofit here in Montgomery County, it really does take a village. Yeah. And it takes lots of volunteers. So to put a number on that would be huge.
Okay.
The people who have supported us since the 1980s.
Because the reason why I ask is you hear a lot more of it now, and I guess you're getting the word out. So somebody's doing their job. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but.
We've talked, for the last, 5 or 6 years, we've seen a steady increase in the need for our services. And people are like, is that a bad thing? Does that mean that it's increasing? Excuse me. But I think that, since the Me Too movement, since we've done such an amazing job, our staff, our board, our volunteers have gotten out and talked to the community and told them about our services, that people are just more aware that we're here and more comfortable calling us, which they've never, been before. So,
yeah. So if someone's calling into the call center is really is it fair to say the main hub of what Laurel House is all about? That's the first step.
Yeah, we try to do it as a, a no wrong door kind of thing. So most people call our hotline, which is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's confidential. But some people will, come to us and call our office for counseling, and they might get referred to us through our local police departments, a hospital, something like that. So we will take referrals in whatever way they come to us. It's primarily through our 24/7 hotline.
Yeah, and you would think, and you mentioned the police department must work very closely in hand with the organization. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, they see a lot. Only 50% of domestic violence incidents are reported to the police, and it's a significant portion of their day-to-day work is responding to domestic disputes. So we've always taken the stance or the philosophy that without our law enforcement partners, we can't do the work that we do as effectively as we can. It really is a community issue, like Brad was saying, and it needs us to work collaboratively with our law enforcement partners so that we can really get to as many victims as we possibly can.
So being a development director, is that something that you're in tune with, where you're going to local police offices, or are you going, reaching out to church groups? How does that work?
Yeah, great question. So a lot of it, I don't do a lot of work as our great staff does, you know, working directly with clients and also police departments. So I'll do more of the outreach to whether it's church groups, businesses, individuals, some of our volunteers, you know, really looking for support and how they can help us. So
what's the response? I'm curious, like when they reach out to you and when you show up, is it good dialogue?
Absolutely. I think people want to help.
Okay.
And you know, there's ways to help us. That's for sure. I mean, you can go to our website and look for ways, whether it's to donate, look at our wish list of things we might need in a pantry in our safe haven center, or ways to volunteer. So I really think, and again, just a credit to the community we live in and we're a part of, that people do want to help, and they don't want to see their neighbors in pain.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
And that's a good point. Does the victim have to be the one to reach out, or can someone reach out on their behalf?
Yeah, I think we get a lot of folks who reach out and say, you know, how do I help? How do I help someone? You know, how do I help my loved one, or my, you know, neighbor, or my friend, or my colleague, and things like that. So, I mean, we're here to offer any of those questions. I mean, we really try to work from an empowerment model and want their survivor, the victim, to call us. But we just started in the last year. We created a significant other support group, and we do offer individual counseling for significant others. So if you have a friend or loved one that you aren't quite sure how to help, and it's really giving you a hard time trying to figure out what to do, you can come in and talk to our counselors, get in a support group, all for free, and kind of get some knowledge and some education as to how to help someone and do it safely.
Yeah, I guess that's the biggest hurdle, is getting that information out to the people that really need it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, it's such a delicate topic. You have to be really strategic on how to do something like that. And what are some of the secrets to do that?
I mean, like Brad said, everyone wants to help, right? Like there's, and it unfortunately, it's so common. It's 1 in 4 women, 1 in 7 men. So it touches so many people that it's amazing once you get out in the community and people find out who you work for, or we can be at a tabling event. And next thing you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I have my so-and-so was involved in this. And it's amazing how much people actually want to talk to you and want to share their stories and to get help. So it's not as hard as it looks, thankfully, because people really want to share their message and, you know, get some support.
Yeah. I'm sure the two of you must hear a lot of very sensitive stories. Mm-hmm. And it's something you're like, wow, like, how do you take that home? That's the thing I think of, because you're hearing this and you're like, and you feel like, I guess your hands are tied at sometimes, because there's just so much you can do, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excuse me. Sorry. I think we preach a lot about self-care, because there's a lot of vicarious trauma that happens around this line of work, because we have a lot of survivors that work with Laurel House, but we also have a lot of new folks that are having to hear some of these really difficult stories.
Mm-hmm.
But we try to offer, you know, as much support. We offer time off for folks. We have a wonderful, wonderful staff that are just amazing advocates. But yeah, it's something that we really have to work hard to when you leave and go home. It's not something that you just stop caring about at your 5 o'clock, you know, time is. So it's an interesting balance, but I think that we've got a really good support or system around each other.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of. You must have a strong support system amongst your coworkers for that reason. And I know the two of you gave me a good understanding of what Laurel House is all about. I'm more curious, if I had to call, or if I had to be involved, I was involved with abuse, what would be my first step?
Well, we'd hope that you'd be able to find us. Someone would give you our phone number, or our website. Our hotline's 1-800-642-3150. Our website is laurel-house.org. And if you were able to reach out to us, I mean, the biggest thing that we do is safety planning with victims and survivors. Because some people maybe are thinking about wanting to leave. They're not quite ready, but they're thinking about what they want, mm-hmm. how they want to leave. Maybe they're actively in the process of leaving, or maybe they left, you know, a year or two ago, but now there's shared children involved and there's still, you know, continuing abuse. So we will help people regardless of what phase they're in terms of their leaving, but we want to make sure that they have a safety plan. So talking them through, you know, what's the best way for them to be safe? If they are leaving, are they packing a grab bag? Are they, you know, letting their family know? Do they have a safe place to go, a shelter, a friend's house, a family member's house? If they're staying, you know, we're talking about keeping their cell phone close with them. If they've already left and the abuse continues, you know, maybe we talk about doing a protection from abuse order or reaching out to law enforcement in any of those phases. But we're really client driven and we're survivor driven. So whatever they think is the safest thing for them to do, that's what we will help them with. Okay. So they're the expert in their own lives and we treat them as such.
So would a lot of victims be reluctant to reach out to police before they'd reach out to Laurel House?
Yeah, I mean, some people don't want to get law enforcement involved. They're worried about, you know, the impact on their children. They're worried about their livelihood, their jobs. Maybe there's some immigration concerns that they have. So they might not feel comfortable calling police just because they might not even be from the United States and have an understanding of what our law enforcement does. But there's certainly things that we can do in terms of safety that might not involve calling the police. You know, people are concerned about the protection from abuse order process. And it's, you know, we've done a lot of work with our Pathonotary's office over the years to help streamline that process to make it really easy for folks. In the last year, we worked with our wonderful Pathonotary, Noah Marlier, who really advocated for our clients and our survivors to get electronic PFAs. So that's been a huge lifesaver for many people, that they can, you know, apply for their PFA and not have to worry about childcare and not have to worry about, you know, taking time off of work or, you know, getting to the courthouse at X amount of time. So there's a lot of things that we can do. But again, if a PFA is not safe for them to do because it might increase the violence, then we'll work on something else with them. We'll find another plan and another way to help them.
And what is the acronym PFA?
Oh, it's a Protection from Abuse Order.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't 100% sure. I know you've referenced it multiple times. Yes. Like, all right, what should the PFA
be? Yeah, a lot of that legal jargon.
Speaking of legalities, is there an age cutoff on who can call?
Yeah, so we're all mandated reporters, obviously, because of the sensitive work that we do. So if there's any kind of child abuse going on, we are legally mandated to report it to the state. But if you're 14 years or older and you're maybe in a dating relationship, your middle school boyfriend or your high school boyfriend is abusive, you can reach out and get services to Laurel House, and we aren't required to make a report, and they can voluntarily opt into services.
So one in every seven victims are male.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty eye-opening. You would never think of it that way. And I'm sure now with the LGBT groups and that must be coming into play also.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of stigma, I think, for male victims to come forward about domestic violence. I think we're seeing more and more get comfortable with coming forward. You know, and it happens to everyone across the spectrum. Domestic violence does not discriminate, regardless of your background, your education level, your race, your ethnicity, your religion, your, you know, how much money you make or don't make, whatever gender you are, it can affect everyone. So our services are open to anyone regardless. It's not just a female issue anymore. It's really spread across to everybody.
And I know that your location is in Upper Gwinnett. Mm-hmm. How many victims are able to take advantage of that facility?
So we are a 12-bedroom shelter at our Safe Haven Center. So we can hold upwards of 34 people, women, men, LGBT, and their children can come to us as well. And they can stay till, you know, oh gosh, some people have stayed upwards of 6 months while they've been trying to find safe and attainable housing. We do about, I think, about 200 a year between victims and their children through the Safe Haven Center.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And kids of the victims also have the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. Yeah. I was not aware of that. That's something in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they are in Laurel House, is there any outside interaction from other family members, or are they there under under Laurel House's guidance? That's
The location's confidential, okay. So we don't have a lot of folks coming in, but certainly we encourage, if they have supportive family members, that is something that they can talk to. I mean, isolation is a big piece when it comes to domestic violence. People are cut off from their support systems, it makes them more dependent on their abuser, which makes the abuser more successful in maintaining that power and control. So for them to have that support, we encourage them to maintain those healthy, safe relationships because they'll need them, you know, moving forward to have that safety net.
I was always curious of the training, the people that are doing the counseling and the guidance. What is that like?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, even a guy in development, I was trained 40 plus hours on, the ins and outs of domestic violence. But it's really Stacy and her crew who do the hands-on with clients that it'd probably take more training than that.
Everyone gets the 40-hour training. It's a certification through our state, our Pennsylvania Coalition Against Domestic Violence. We all have to get 40 hours of certification. And then after that, it's every year an extra 10 hours of training. So, yeah.
When you came on, were you shocked with how intense the training was?
Yeah, I really was. But it's great to know that our volunteers and our staff are all going through the same thing. That it really does give us a great sense of how we can help people who come to our offices.
Mm-hmm. And I know there's multiple layers in Laurel House. The one thing that I was curious, because you mentioned you have volunteers and you have staff, and they sort of are interchangeable. Mm-hmm. What's the DART program? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, our domestic abuse response team, it is actually going to be 20 years old in 2025, which is very exciting. So we started in 2005. There was a domestic homicide in Town Menson Township. So a lot of the North Penn police departments got together and said, we really need something that is not so, you know, after the fact. If we as law enforcement who are going out to these houses multiple times are sensing something happening, we want something that's going to be immediate and right away with the victim when we're responding out to the call. So they piloted our DART program in 2005, and it did phenomenally well. And now we're in about 75% of the police departments in Montgomery County. But we provide 24-hour a day, 7-day a week on-call coverage, where if law enforcement gets called to a domestic dispute and the victim wants to speak to an advocate, we will send an advocate any time of day or night. Holidays, weekends, everything, we will send an advocate out to that location if it's safe for them to be there. But we've met people at hospitals, at police stations, at McDonald's parking lots, anywhere we can go to kind of offer them that safety planning, help them get into shelter, just to let them know that there's support out there, there's help out there. And then we do a lot of case management with them, where we go to court with them, we file them through the criminal justice system, we help them with protection from abuse orders and whatever else they might need.
What are the qualifications you need to be a case manager, and what does that detail? Because we know what case managers are in the hospital setting and in that realm. What is it with Laurel House?
Sure. So, I mean, all of our advocates, whether you're on the hotline or in our domestic response team program or our counseling department, all go through the same training. It's just that they might have some different responsibilities here and there. So the same folks who answer our hotline also do the case management for all of our shelter residents. Our domestic abuse response team does case management for folks that are in the community or who need help, you know, going through the criminal justice system, that sort of thing. But it's really sort of, it's tailored for whatever that survivor or victim's needs are. So, you know, are they looking for housing? Or can we help them with, you know, finding and obtaining housing? Are they looking for a job? Do they need, you know, connections to resources or other organizations for other supportive services? Do they need, you know, mental health counseling or that sort of thing? So it's really based on whatever that client needs, that's how their case management is tailored. So it's really, again, that survivor-driven piece. We make sure that we're meeting each individual's needs as they arise. So
the method behind my madness of asking the question was because I'm more curious of when people are volunteering to be part of Laurel House, what do they usually want to do? Like, do they get to choose? Or is it like, no, you're going to be working the call center? You don't want to, that's what I was thinking. That's why I asked.
Yeah, I mean, we have, like Brad was saying earlier, an amazing group of volunteers because we could not do the work that we do without our volunteers. So some people choose to volunteer and work directly with our crisis response team. They want to volunteer on our text line. They want to work directly with victims and survivors. So we have opportunities that they can access those. But then we also do a lot of indirect volunteering, tabling events, our special events, all kinds of things. So.
Yeah, it really runs from you can hand out water at our fall 5K,
right.
Or you can come into the office and help us put together backpacks for school drives. Mm-hmm. But it really does vary, and we meet the volunteer where they're at and what they want to do to help.
Yeah.
So when we hear volunteers, the first thing I think of is, how is Laurel House funded? How do they raise money to keep Laurel House up and running?
Yeah, the first thing I want to say with all of our services, they're free. So mm-hmm. anyone who does knock on our door or calls our hotline, our services are free for any clients that we serve. So yeah, fundraising is tough. So we do have special events throughout the year. We have an annual gala in the springtime. We also do our Walk a Mile event, Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event in the springtime. Mm-hmm. And also then in the fall, we do a Breaking the Silence luncheon. We have a 5K dash and walk as well with part of that. So different events throughout the years is part of that. But also right here in, right down the street, Upper Marion, is our Marion's Attic. Uh-huh. So Marion's Attic is a thrift shop. We have two of them, one up in Lansdale, Laurel's Loft, but the one here in Marion's Attic, and both of them, the proceeds and donations that are there also help Laurel House. So any additional funding we get, or that sale of that pair of jeans, those services or those monies will come to Laurel House to help with our counseling, help with our community education, helps with all our services. So when you're buying something, you're making a difference.
That's awesome.
And that's another way to volunteer as well, mm-hmm. actually. Yeah. We do have volunteers, mostly staff, are both our locations for our thrift shops.
And I talked about like the need growing, the calls for our services have been increasing over the last few years. Unfortunately, the government funding that we get doesn't increase as fast as the need has grown. But we've been very lucky and to be in Montgomery County because we have such a generous community. So any donation, no matter how small or how big, is hugely helpful to us, because like Brad said, we charge not a dime for any of our services to survivors, because we want everyone to be able to get our services. So any little bit helps, which is wonderful. So
the thrift shops, I'm more curious, where are the goods? Are the goods donated by major corporations that are for sale? Where is most of this stuff coming from?
Great question, and you hit the nail on the head. Sometimes it does come from a corporation. They may run a drive in their office, or it may come from somebody who had excess jeans that are now out of season that they would donate to us that we can sell. But also it comes from a generous community. Mm-hmm. So when someone donates maybe a jacket that they no longer wear, we can put it out at the thrift shop, and some person's trash is another person's treasure, really.
That's true. Yeah.
And it really does help. And the other thing I'll add here is our clients can also use our thrift shops as well. And that's a great service, because if some people do come to us with nothing, we have something to provide for them as well, whether it's some housewares that have been at the thrift shop or clothing as well. It's a great service we can provide.
Yeah, if they have job interviews, they can get work clothing or a suit or something from our thrift shop, and it's no charge to them.
Well, what are the hours of the thrift shop? Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, it's mostly 10 to 5,
okay.
Monday through Saturday. Every once in a while, there's some special hours, but for the most part, it's 10 to 5 every day.
Does the King of Prussia location do better than the Lansdale?
Those are fighting words.
Yeah. That's why I asked.
No, it's a great question. They both do great.
Yeah.
They really do. The managers for both stores are competitive, but they do a great job.
I get a nerve.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, but they both do a great job in their respective communities, really welcoming the community. And both communities are very generous.
Yeah.
So that makes a huge difference for us.
Yeah, and the staff there and the volunteers are so passionate about the work, because with the thrift shops, yes, they're a huge fundraising piece for us. Yes, it's a great way for us to connect to the community, but for a lot of survivors, their first touch point might be the thrift shop because it's safe for them to be in the thrift shop. They can get information about our services there. So the staff and volunteers are just as strong an advocate as our shelter advocates or our DART advocates, but they're an amazing group and make people feel comfortable reaching out to us for more services.
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking when you feel safe, is the texting seem to be more popular now than the call center?
No, it's not. But we did see an increase. We started it during the pandemic because when people were at home, it wasn't safe for them to call. So a lot of people were using the text line to reach out at that time. But I think the biggest success with the text line has been the young people, like teens and young adults who, you know, I'm from a generation who doesn't always, who doesn't always like to text. Make a phone call, but we love to text. Yeah. So it's more, there's more anonymity there. There's more comfort to be able to reach out via text. So we've seen quite an increase and an interest in the text line from our teen population and our young adult population. So.
And I would think that'd be true, but I was more curious about things being taken out of context too, because when you're talking to someone, you're getting that true feeling of what's happening. The texting sometimes could be cold, you know what I mean? Because it's they're in black and white.
Yeah, you know? I mean, and it's, you know, sometimes it's just nice for them to get some education, to understand our programs, to get a phone number to reach out to, you know, to do some safety planning. And for a lot of victims and survivors, to be able to reach out to someone and for us to be able to provide a non-judgmental, you know, very neutral, you know, partial, you know, support and information is a huge benefit to them. But, you know, we encourage them, once you reach out to the text line, you know, get involved with our counseling program, you know, talk to one of our DART advocates. You know, maybe they need to come into shelter. We encourage them to call the hotline, that sort of thing. So
as we wind down the program, it's safe to now share some of the contact information with our audience. Would you like to tell them where they can get in touch with Laurel House?
Sure. They can call our hotline, like I said, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-642-3150. And I'll turn it over to Brad for our website and our social media.
Yeah, it's www.laurel-house.org. The easiest way to get a hold of us. And on there, you can find our links to our Facebook, our Instagram, our LinkedIn. We actually have a great YouTube page, some videos to learn more about who we are and what we do as well.
Fantastic.
And there is a, on our website, if you're visiting, if you're a victim or a survivor who's visiting the website, we do have an escape button on there. So if you need to get off the website and have it taken from your search history, you just hit that button and it's safe to be able to get out. Yep. So
good point. Very good. Well, it was very nice having Stacy and Brad here today. From all of us here at UMGA Television, I'm Chuck Curlin. Thank you for watching.